Your headlines for this hour: Israel's savage strikes on the Gaza Strip claimed the lives of hundreds of Palestinian children as the death toll rises or exceeds 1,500. Iran's foreign minister says the resistance axis may open new fronts against Israel if the regime's war crimes continue in the Gaza Strip. And pro-Palestine activists hold more rallies across the world in solidarity with the people of Gaza, accusing Israel of committing genocide. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, the death toll from Israel's savage attacks on the Gaza Strip continues to rise nearly a week after the regime launched its onslaught on the besieged Palestinian territory. According to the health ministry in Gaza, more than 1,500 Palestinians, including 500 children and 276 women, have been killed in the Israeli strikes, and more than 6,600 others have been wounded. The regime's latest air raids have claimed dozens of lives in the densely populated Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. Hundreds of thousands of Gazans have also been displaced as a result of the regime's relentless and indiscriminate attacks. The coastal territory remains under Israel's complete siege, with no access to electricity, water, food and medicines. Israel started this onslaught on Saturday after Gaza-based resistance groups launched a multi-front operation against the regime. That's why Palestinian resistance groups launch more rockets towards the occupied territories as the Israeli death toll rises to 1,300. The Hamas resistance movement says the rockets were fired towards Tel Aviv in response to the killing of civilians in Gaza. According to Israeli media, multiple rockets fell in northern Israel, including Netanya and Hadera. Southern cities of Beersheba, Ashkelon and Ashdod have also been targeted. The retaliatory operations come as Israel has been massing its troops and tanks near the Gaza fence and getting ready for a ground invasion. Israel has used internationally banned white phosphorus bombs in its strikes on Gaza's Karama neighborhood. Over 2 million Palestinians are trapped in the Gaza Strip, which is known as the world's biggest open-air prison. Author and journalist Robert Fantina says Israel's brutal bombardment of Gaza is another proof that the regime never wanted to give any concession to Palestinians and will never do so.
Riyadh is not going to be in any rush now to normalize relations with Israel following this barbaric genocidal action against the people in Gaza. This is collective punishment. It's a violation of international law, starving people, preventing them from getting water. These are crimes against humanity, and the Israeli regime is performing them on a daily basis, committing them on a daily basis, and the rest of the world is, or most of the world is silent. The Arab nations that you've mentioned need to speak up very forcibly, very strongly, and support the people of Gaza and oppose the Zionist regime. Those countries that have normalized relations need to sever ties, because this is not what their people have ever wanted. And now, with this latest murderous genocidal onslaught, this is stronger than ever, an indication that the Zionist entity is not going to give an inch to the Palestinian people. That when other Arab nations normalize these relations, it's usually with the thought or the belief that there will be some concessions made. There are going to be no concessions made. There never were. Israel has never wanted that, has never intended it, and has no intention of doing it. The only thing Israel will understand is force in the form of sanctions and international condemnation.
Israeli forces have killed 5 more Palestinians during violent raids across the occupied West Bank. According to the Palestinian media, the regime's forces fatally shot a 17-year-old teen in Kalkalia. They first shot him in the back and then prevented his transport to hospital. 2 women were also killed by Israeli forces in separate incidents in Ramallah. Israeli settlers also shot and killed a Palestinian man and his son in an ambush south of Nablus. The new fatalities bring the number of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces in the West Bank since Saturday to 36. Over 650 others have been wounded. Investigative journalist Asa Winstanley from London comments on how the Western media distort truth about the crimes of Israel against the Palestinians. Let's take a listen.
Well, the context I'm working in is the West. The Western media we're seeing at the moment is particularly untrustworthy on the issue of Palestine, especially. The Western media has been putting out all kinds of atrocity propaganda, essentially, from it's very unverifiable and highly dubious and often anonymous Israeli sources, and we're seeing and these disinformation stories are a way for the Palestinian resistance to be delegitimized in the West. And so the context of the British media and the Western media in general when it covers the issue of Palestine is always missing the actual reality on the ground and the real history and the immediate history. And even the last year, for example, is always missing. So, for example, it's never mentioned or very rarely mentioned in the Western media that even before the start of Al-Aqsa flood operation on Saturday, around 250 Palestinians have been killed this year, a record number of killings by the Israeli occupation forces in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And so we can see that, you know, the idea that this operation by the resistance forces came out of nowhere is a really misleading one. And even deeper than that, the actual fundamental cause of violence in Palestine is missing. The fact that Palestinians were driven out of their homeland by force, by violence, by massacres, even by rapes in some instances by Israeli and Zionist forces.
Israel's foreign minister says if Israel's war crimes continue against the Palestinian people, it is possible for the resistance axis to open new fronts against the regime. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark upon his arrival in the Lebanese capital city of Beirut. He added that displacing thousands of Palestinians and cutting their access to water, electricity, food and medicines are organized war crimes committed by the Israeli regime. Amir Abdullahian stressed that the continuation of such crimes may elicit reactions from other parts of the resistance axis. He said the Israeli regime and its backers will be responsible for the consequences of their crimes. Before his trip to Lebanon, Amir Abdullahian had met with Iraq's Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani in Baghdad. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution describes as a destructive quake the recent anti-Israel operation by Palestinians. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the operation has devastated some of the fundamental structures of the occupying regime. He called it an irreparable defeat for Israel in terms of intelligence and military. Here's more.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says Israel will receive a heavier slap for the regime's ongoing massacre of the Palestinian people in the besieged Gaza Strip. The leader emphasized that the Gaza massacre will bring a greater calamity to the Zionists after they suffered, quote, an irreparable failure both in terms of military and intelligence. Ayatollah Khamenei further described as a destructive quake the anti-Israel operation launched by Palestinians. He said those who blame the operation on non-Palestinians are making mistakes. The leader underlined that the damage inflicted on Israel in the surprise operation by Palestinians is the result of the regime's own actions. Ayatollah Khamenei said the brave move by Palestinians was a response to years of Israeli crimes. The leader said Israel is now playing the victim card and that Western media outlets are helping the regime in this regard. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the regime cannot be portrayed as an oppressed entity while it is actually a monster. He warned Israel and its backers that the bloodshed of Palestinians will bring them greater calamity. The leader said the Israeli regime is playing the victim card in order to double down on its oppression and justify its attack on people's houses, attack on civilians, and its massacre and mass killing of Gazans.
Meanwhile, the Israeli regime indiscriminate aerial strikes on the Gaza Strip has killed hundreds of people and left the besieged territory in ruins. Palestinian health officials say the situations in Gaza's hospital are indescribable as the Israeli regime has cut off food, water, electricity and fuel supplies to the coastal enclave.
The ferocious bombardment of the Gaza Strip has left the besieged territory in ruins. The residents of Gaza are facing unimaginable suffering.
But my neighbors, they didn't evacuate as well. They have their windows down. Here are their windows. And here is the family. They're gathering all together, also in a place far away from the window. I was trying to explain things, but I think you can hear them now.
Aid groups say the damage to water, sanitation, and hygiene facilities have already disrupted services to more than 2.3 million people there. Israeli officials have cut water, electricity, and fuel supplies to the coastal enclave. Israel is squeezing Palestinians in Gaza further, extending an existing 16-year air, land, and sea blockade of the territory. Legal experts have been raising the question of whether Israel's actions could be considered a war crime by the International Criminal Court.
The humanitarian situation in Gaza was extremely dire before these hostilities. Now it will only deteriorate exponentially. Medical equipment, food, fuel, and other humanitarian supplies are desperately needed, along with access for humanitarian personnel. Relief and entry of essential supplies into Gaza must be facilitated, and the UN will continue efforts to provide aid to respond to these needs.
According to the UN, more than 187,000 of Gaza's 2.3 million people have left their homes. There are no bomb shelters in Gaza. Residents who have lost their homes have nowhere to turn except the 83 UNRWA schools across the territory. According to Palestinian health officials, Israeli strikes have targeted hospitals and medical crews. Hospitals are overcrowded with injured people.
Health facilities, patients, health workers, and civilians in general have to be protected and safeguarded, as Dr. Tedros has said over the week.
There is a shortage of drugs and medical supplies and a shortage of fuel for generators. The Palestinian Ministry of Health has called for a safe corridor to ensure the entry of urgent medical aid into Gaza's hospitals. The Red Crescent has delivered some medical aid to Gaza through the Rafah crossing, but the delivered aid is far from enough to alleviate the pains and sufferings of the people in Gaza. The Gaza power plant, now the only source of electricity, has run out of fuel. The loss of electricity will directly affect hospitals and the water supply.
Pro-Palestine activists are holding more rallies across the world to express solidarity with the people of Gaza as Israel presses ahead with its deadliest strikes on the territory. In the U.S. city of New York, students gathered in front of a public university to voice their support for the Palestinians.
They need to be more responsible. They need to speak up for Palestine. They need to condemn what Israel is doing. It's not okay. And we have so many years of history that is just completely being ignored. And I feel like that by speaking up today, we can really bring a change, and maybe on an international level, because Palestine will definitely be free.
I believe that there needs to be, Palestine needs to regain their land back after, you know, what we believe is like Israel occupation. And overall, I think that there needs to be peace. And overall, I think that Palestine should gain their land back.
The protesters called Israel an apartheid entity, accusing the regime of committing genocide in the Gaza Strip. They said Israel is responsible for decades of tragic bloodshed across the occupied territories and beyond. Elsewhere in the Tunisian capital city of Tunis, people took to the streets to express support for the Palestinians in Gaza.
Today's march is organized by the National Committee to support the resistance in Palestine. This is a first march and a message to all the Arab people to go out to the streets to support the Palestinian right and the Palestinian people. And this is also a message to the West that the Palestinian people are not isolated. And even though there were Arab leaders who gave up on the Palestinian issue, the Arab people hold Palestine in their hearts, and they express every time that they are with the rights of the Palestinian and will not give it up.
Earlier on Thursday, protesters hit the streets of Jordan's capital Amman, demanding the government to end its relations with Israel and expel the regime's ambassador. Similar pro-Palestine rallies have been held in many Muslim and non-Muslim countries since Israel started its deadly raids in Gaza on Saturday. Israel's indiscriminate strikes on the fully besieged Gaza Strip are drawing strong international condemnation. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation has slammed the regime's deadly onslaught against Gaza as a war crime. The OIC also called Israel's military campaign against the territory brutal aggression and a blatant violation of international law and international humanitarian law. It urged the international community to make Israel immediately stop its attacks and ensure the opening of humanitarian corridors to facilitate the entry of basic supplies, including medicines, into Gaza. The International Committee of the Red Cross has warned that hospitals across the Gaza Strip could turn into morgues without electricity in the wake of the regime's relentless aggression and all-out siege. The United Nations World Food Programme has also raised the alarm about the humanitarian situation in Gaza. Well, that's it for this hour's bulletin. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The glorious Palestinian military operation in the occupied territories made the rulers of the Zionist regime believe their nightmare of collapse is coming to life. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Kayhan International wrote, no tear was shed by the self-styled advocates of human rights when terrorists launched explosive-laden drones to target a graduation ceremony of Syrian military cadets in the city of Homs earlier this week, resulting in the death of around 100 young aspiring soldiers and various degrees of injury to over 250 others, some of whom are in serious condition. Not a day passes when Zionist troops and dangerously armed illegal Jewish migrants hunt and hound to death unarmed Palestinians, including children, in the towns and cities of the West Bank of River Jordan. But no one in the supposedly civilized societies of North America and Europe bothers to condemn this unabated genocide of the past 75 years. Neither the world body nor its so-called Security Council have ever objected to the almost daily violation of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of UN member Syria, whose towns and cities are targets of Israeli drones, missiles, and aircraft for the past few years, with mounting loss of life and destruction of the infrastructure. Since 1979, UN Security Council Resolution 446 has not just been lying dormant, but systematically violated through building of Jewish townships in a sizable part of Syria's Golan Heights. The Shaba farmlands of Lebanon, the eastern part of Beit al-Muqaddas, and the West Bank, all of which have been virtually annexed with the tacit approval of the US and the UK. But the international community refuses to pressure the Zionist regime to withdraw from these 1967 occupied territories. Moreover, Gaza has been under siege for the past 16 years and its 2.3 million people suffering from economic hardships that worsen because of the frequent air raids of the Zionist regime and the death and destruction it entails. Yet, this terrorism of a racist and roguish regime is never denounced by the defenders of democracy. Now, when the besieged Gazans decide to exercise their right of self-defense by launching a lightning assault on parts of the 1948 occupied territories of their usurped homeland, they are being called terrorists, and that too by those whose state terrorism against fellow humans knows no limits, whether on the basis of race and religion or simply the lust for hegemony and expansionism. Coupled in all these cases with their intense hatred for Muslims, ever becoming economically independent and politically powerful. Why do they fear Islam? Why do they want the Palestinians, or for that matter, the Lebanese, the Syrians, the Iraqis, the Egyptians, the Yemenis, the Bahrainis, the Afghans, and the pious and patriotic people of the Islamic Republic of Iran to be deprived of their inalienable right of resistance? The answers are obvious. The terroristic regimes which rule their roost in several supposedly powerful countries fear that the liberating message of the Noble Quran will release people from the bondage of the libertine life promoted by the liberal democracies and the shackles of superstition imposed by demagogues riding to power on the jingoistic tendencies of ignorant mobs. In other words, such vanishing breeds are terrified of the thought of the equal rights of all mankind, and thus they have no other choice but to criminally voice support for the crimes against humanity of the illegal Zionist regime and label as terrorist the poor Palestinians on all those Muslims striving to awaken minds, enlighten hearts, and strengthen the spirit of universal brotherhood for building the ideal world order based on peace, prosperity, and justice. Therefore, Operation Al-Aqsa Storm that caught intelligence agencies of global arrogance by surprise and shattered the myth of invincibility of nuclear-armed Israel came as a rude shock to the true terrorists all over the world who have rushed to the support of Tel Aviv and are weeping for the killer Israelis killed by Palestinian defenders, the Zionist criminals injured, and the thuggish soldiers captured and taken to Gaza. At the same time, these hypocrites, whether in Washington, London, Paris, and Berlin, or in other parts of the world, have dropped all pretensions to humanitarian values by applauding the ongoing air raids of the Zionists on Gaza that have so far claimed the life of many innocent Palestinians, mostly women and children, in addition to destroying the infrastructure of the besieged enclave. It is, however, naive of global arrogance to think the Palestinians are being pulverized by the Israelis who, through their barbaric atrocities, intend to teach a lesson as well to the Lebanese, the Syrians, the Iraqis, the Yemenis, the Egyptians, the Iranians, the Turks, and the others from ever thinking of unifying ranks for the liberation of Al-Aqsa. That will definitely happen and result in the weeding out of the cancerous tumor called Israel. Meanwhile, Palestine Chronicle wrote, in 2005, the Israeli army escaped from Gaza because of the intense resistance through the Gaza Strip. It evacuated its forces and quickly redeployed, circulated Gaza from all directions, thus the notorious siege of today. The resistance back then was much weaker, less organized, and far less armed than it is now. If the Zionist regime takes charge of Gaza again, it will have to fight that same Palestinian resistance daily and possibly for years to come. It is unclear what direction Netanyahu will choose. But either way, no matter what will happen in the coming days and weeks, the Zionist regime has, in many ways, lost the war.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, here is a thought-provoking saying from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, addressed to Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. O Ali, three characters are high moral standards. Regard for the one who ruptured relations with you, granting the one who deprived you, and pardoning the one who wronged you.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. باید فهمید.
We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
و آنگاه پیاده کردن این مفاهیم در واقعیت زندگی است.
And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزای لازمی است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, what should we spend our money on when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It is an honor to be here at your service, dear friends. We are talking about how and what to spend our wealth on when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle. Now, of course, you know, when people start to go to work, or sometimes we get some money for doing our chores, right? But in general, eventually we get a degree, we go to a job, and we get some work. Via work, we have income, and of course, this income needs to be halal and permissible, and it must not at all costs be income that is haram and prohibited. But what do we do with that wealth that we have acquired? Now, in some situations and conditions, we find that Islam does give a lot of specific detail on certain things, but on certain other things, Islam gives us a framework. And then a person has the flexibility to move about within that framework. So, for example, one of those things is to what to spend our wealth on. Now, Islam doesn't necessarily tell us you need to buy this and you don't need to buy that and you should buy this and you shouldn't buy that, in the sense where it specifically tells you buy a blue shirt or, you know, buy a shirt that costs this much. Right? It doesn't get down to this itty-gritty, because how can you get down to the itty-gritty, you know, of 8 billion Muslims when the whole world becomes Muslim, inshallah, right? How do you control 8 billion Muslims and tell them what to do? But it has general frameworks, you know, for example, extravagance or, poverty or wealth, or certain rules and regulations which help us to make our decision-making process easier. We continue after the break. Welcome back, dear friends. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about what to spend our wealth on, right? Eventually we get a job, we earn some income. So what do we spend our wealth on? Well, first and foremost, in this framework that Islam has taught us, it is that we need to spend our wealth on something that is halal. It is permissible. This is one of those rules and regulations within that framework, right? After that, we find that the main and fundamental principle, perhaps even before something being halal or haram, is to spend our wealth on something that leads to the obedience to the Almighty Allah. And that is what primarily and most fundamentally we should be doing with our wealth in our Islamic lifestyle. So, for example, if helping the poor is in that specific situation going to lead us towards the obedience of the Almighty Allah, then that's what we should spend our wealth on. If buying a shirt in order for us to be able to look presentable and look, and raise the name and the glory of Islam, because people will say, look, Muslims are so clean, they're so nice, they're so, you know, good, well-behaved, etc., whatever the situation might be. But in that situation, if those things lead to the obedience to the Almighty Allah, then we spend our wealth on that. You know, if we are not able to reach the masjid on time because we're having to take 6 different buses to get there, you know, but if we buy a car, we'll be able to go to the center, Islamic center, more conveniently, more quickly, more regularly. Well, this is leading to the obedience to the Almighty Allah. And so first and foremost, that is what we should spend our wealth on. Spend our wealth on something that helps us to obey the Almighty Allah. And of course, anything that helps us to obey the Almighty Allah is going to be halal. And in this manner, we can kind of start to figure out slowly but surely what and how to spend our wealth in our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Five years ago, Jamal Khashoggi walked into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul to pick up a document he needed in order to marry his Turkish fiancé, but he never came out. Investigations found that the Saudi journalist had been murdered and dismembered by a Saudi hit squad. The Saudi crown prince said that it was a mistake, describing the whole story as a rogue operation.
Absolutely. His Royal Highness the Crown Prince has nothing to do with this issue. In fact, the National Security Advisor in the U.S. said this. This was a rogue operation. We have a better sense of what happened. This was individuals exceeding their authority and going beyond their mandate, and these individuals made a tremendous mistake, and for this mistake they will pay a price.
Some countries, such as the U.S. and Turkey, disagreed with the Saudi version of events. U.S. intelligence officials, for example, believe the order to capture or kill Khashoggi came from the very top in Riyadh, that is, from Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman himself. In a 2021 statement, the U.S. Director of National Intelligence said, "We assess that Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved an operation in Istanbul, Turkey, to capture or kill Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi." The accusation and denial game went on for months. Bin Salman dismissed the accusation as baseless, presenting himself as a victim of an international vendetta.
Did you order the murder of Jamal Khashoggi?
Absolutely not. This was a heinous crime.
But Washington and Ankara, on the other hand, insisted that the Crown Prince was involved in the murder and couldn't get away with it. They call for justice to be done. After half a decade, it's a proper time to see how serious the United States and Turkey were about what they called justice for Jamal. In the fall of 2018, the Khashoggi case triggered an uproar in Washington. Unusual bipartisan fury in Congress brought arms sales to Saudi Arabia to a halt, albeit temporarily.
The current relationship with Saudi Arabia is not working for America. They have been strategic allies and could be in the future. But right now, it is more of a burden than it is an asset. And why do I say that? This country, led by the de facto leader as the Crown Prince, has been a wrecking ball. And the Khashoggi incident is just one of many, but the most egregious. And I think most people can relate to why we're upset.
As for the Trump administration, it worked to shield bin Salman from further scrutiny.
We have no smoking gun that the Crown Prince was involved, not the intelligence community or anyone else. There is no smoking gun. We have not changed that accountability for the murder is our expectation of everyone involved in the murder. Accountability is our position, has not changed at all. And by the way, I have personally read all the intelligence. I have read all the translations.
Trump made it clear that the U.S.-Saudi alliance was nothing more than an arrangement based on keeping global oil prices stable and negotiating lucrative weapons deals.
In terms of the order of $110 billion, think of that, $110 billion, all they're going to do is give it to other countries, and I think that would be very foolish for our country, but there are other things we can do that will be very severe.
In 2020, Trump's successor Joe Biden threatened to turn Saudi Arabia into a global pariah over the murder.
I think the report speaks for itself, and I think you've seen today a number of very important steps to recalibrate the relationship. First of all, the release of the report itself and the transparency that that provides. This is a report that in a sense, it's not fresh off the printing press. It's been there. We released it. We were determined to bring transparency to this issue and to share with the American people what we know. And again, I think that report speaks for itself.
In February 2021, a month after taking office, Biden did follow through on a campaign promise to release a U.S. intelligence report which directly blamed Prince Mohammed bin Salman for Khashoggi's murder. Despite the U.S. prepared evidence, Biden decided not to directly punish Prince Mohammed by imposing a travel ban or sanctions against him. After initially reviewing weapons sales to Saudi Arabia, by mid-2022, the Biden administration resumed billions of dollars in arms sales and military support to the kingdom. At the same time, a federal judge dismissed a lawsuit against the Crown Prince after the Biden administration recommended he be granted immunity. In July 2022, Biden traveled to Saudi Arabia to meet the prince at home. The White House said Biden had raised Khashoggi's case with the prince during their meeting. Many, however, interpreted the visit as Biden begging for lower oil prices.
Finally, we discussed human rights and the need for political reform. As always, as I always do, I made clear that the topic is vitally important to me and to the United States. With respect to the murder of Khashoggi, I raised it at the top of the meeting, making it clear what I thought of it at the time and what I think of it now. And it was exactly, I was straightforward and direct in discussing it. I made my view crystal clear. I said very straightforwardly, for an American president to be silent on an issue of human rights, is this consistent with inconsistent with who we are and who I am? I'll always stand up for our values.
Currently, the Biden administration is trying to convince Bin Salman to sign a peace agreement with the Israeli regime while helping the kingdom launch a civilian nuclear program. It's a far cry from Biden's pledge during his presidential campaign to treat Prince Mohammed bin Salman and his kingdom as a pariah for the murder of Khashoggi. More than a dozen human rights groups recently released a joint statement accusing the Biden administration of helping aid bin Salman's rehabilitation on the world stage and asking it to prioritize significant and genuine human rights improvements by the Saudi government. 5 years into Khashoggi's death, his case is little discussed in major media outlets, nor even in Turkey, where local media once publicized his tragic fate. In 2020, Turkey put 26 Saudi nationals on trial in absentia, as the Saudis refused to hand them over to Istanbul. But in early 2022, the case was halted. Last year, a Turkish court transferred its trial in absentia of the 26 individuals to Saudi Arabia, a move slammed by human rights groups. Turkish authorities said it was impossible to prosecute the case because the defendants were not there in person. However, human rights organizations claimed the decision was political, a result of Turkey and Saudi Arabia reconciling after the murder. In the wake of Khashoggi's death, the U.S. vowed to hold Saudi Arabia accountable. But in reality, Washington has done the opposite. Just a week before the death anniversary of Jamal Khashoggi, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken released a statement on the occasion of Saudi Arabia's National Day, expressing how the U.S. greatly values the enduring relationship we have had with Saudi Arabia over the past 8 decades. 5 years after Khashoggi's death, business as usual for the U.S. and Turkey. The two countries which moaned and groaned for months. They accused, rightly or wrongly, the Saudi crown prince of orchestrating the gruesome murder. But by the looks of things, they've already compromised their claimed concerns for human rights midway.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A new survey has found that the number of American households reporting tumbling incomes is growing. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, the number of U.S. adults with declining incomes has soared in recent weeks in a sign of a weakening labor market. And that was according to a Bloomberg report. Bloomberg added, the share of households facing a drop in their incomes rose from 10.7% in August to 11.8% last month, citing a survey of the U.S. labor market by data intelligence company Morning Consult. The increase was mainly driven by high and middle-income families and the West region of the United States. About 20% of adults polled who earn $100,000 or more annually reported that they expected their incomes to drop in the next 4 weeks. RT added, the share of employees who reported working over 35 hours fell to 46.7%, representing a 12% drop from September 2022. The decline marked the lowest level since the spring of 2021, signaling a slowdown in U.S. business activity, the survey revealed. The most cited reason by respondents was soft business conditions. This comes as U.S. inflation-adjusted household income fell by the most in 12 years in 2022, highlighting the toll of a higher cost of living and the expiration of pandemic-era programs. The income and poverty data released by the U.S. Census last month showed how deeply the U.S. economic conditions were affected by the COVID-19 crisis and the government's response to it. The measure of child poverty more than doubled following the expiry of pandemic-era child tax credits last year amid the worst inflation in 40 years, which has undermined household spending power. In another report, RT wrote, as Uncle Sam continues to pump billions of dollars into Kiev's flagging fight against Russia and provide tempting handouts to illegal migrants, why is the average American worker forced to live paycheck to paycheck? Here's a question that most people have considered at least once in their lives and probably a lot recently. How much annual income would you need to feel financially secure? For the average American, the magic number comes out to be $233,000 a year, according to a survey by Bankrate. To bring the 99% back down to earth, the U.S. Census Bureau released some sobering data that dashed those elusive six-digit dreams. Inflation-adjusted median household income fell to $74,580 in 2022. A 2,300 decline from 2021 average of $76,330. This marks the third straight annual decrease since the COVID-19 pandemic began in 2020, taking a wrecking ball to the heart of the economy. The bad news doesn't end there for U.S. consumers, who are now struggling with the consequences of a foreign conflict in a distant land and a wide-open border. Those factors have prompted the cost of living to surge higher than it has in over four decades amid runaway inflation. In June 2022, the year-over-year inflation rate, as measured by the Consumer Price Index, hit a jaw-dropping 9.1%, the highest it has been since the administration of former President Ronald Reagan. A significant reason for the increase in inflation happened on March 3, 2022, when President Joe Biden signed an executive order to ban the import of Russian oil, liquefied natural gas, and coal to the U.S. This decision has had disastrous results for the local economy. Since Biden's inauguration, the cost of gasoline alone had jumped at one point by 100%. As of September 27th, the average price of regular gas was $3.832 per gallon, according to the AAA, while gas prices were an average of $2.3 per gallon when Biden entered office, forcing just about everything else to skyrocket, including the number of poor people in the U.S. The poverty rate in the U.S. exploded last year, the first increase in 13 years, and that was according to the Census Bureau. In 2022, the rate was 12.4%, up 4.6 percentage points from 2021, according to the Supplemental Poverty Measure, SPM, a method for tallying government welfare programs and tax credits designed to assist low-income families. Meanwhile, the expectations index, determined by consumers' short-term outlook for income, business, and labor market conditions, sunk to 73.7 in September. That follows a drop to 83.3 in August. The worrisome part is that an expectation index below 80 generally indicates an impending recession. An economic tragedy is already quietly happening for millions of American consumers who are now living paycheck to paycheck precariously and who have been forced to use the payment method of last resort to make ends meet, the almighty credit card with its exorbitant interest fees. On this score, the U.S. economy has broken yet another record, although not in a way that could be considered something to cheer about. The Street reported U.S. credit card debt rose by $45 billion to $1.3 trillion in the second quarter from the first quarter, a 4.6% quarterly increase. The Street added, "It's the first time in U.S. history that household credit card balances topped $1 trillion mark as the number of credit card accounts expanded by 5.48 million to 578.35 million in the quarter. When consumer debt suddenly equals the amount the U.S. spends on its military-industrial complex, you know there is a problem." Clearly, the U.S. has some serious domestic issues that need to be resolved, but instead, it would rather fund a totally senseless proxy war against a nuclear power halfway around the world. Washington has given Ukraine close to $100 billion in aid, with more in the pipeline, since Moscow launched its operation in February 2022. The cash, however, has not only been used to fund Ukraine's military. Billions of dollars have subsidized participants of the Ukrainian economy, like farmers and small business owners, market players whose counterparts in the U.S. desperately need help too. A recent study conducted by the Council on Foreign Relations shows that more than $30 billion, around 40% of total U.S. aid to Ukraine as of July 31st, has been financial or humanitarian assistance that is not directly connected to military support. Military funding comes out to around $50 billion.
Water crisis in the Gaza Strip. The amount of groundwater storage in the Gaza Strip is very few. Studies made by the Palestinian Water Authority